Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Ruby Rogues podcast. This week on our panel, we have Valentino Stoll.
Hey, now.
John Epperson.
Hello, everybody.
I'm Charles Max Wood from Top End Devs. This week, we have a special guest. We have Anton. You have a long name, dude.
It's Ivanopoulos.
Ivanopoulos. Cool. You want to just introduce yourself real quick, let people know who you are and why you're famous?
Yep, no worries. My name is Anton. I'm a software engineer in Melbourne. I work for a company called Hotdog, and so we're a health tech startup kind of in the platform enablement space. So that's, kind of been doing for the last 3 or 4 years.
Cool. Hey, folks, this is Charles Max Wood from Top End Devs, and lately I've been working on actually building out Top End Devs. If you're interested, you can go to topendevs.com/podcast, and you can actually hear a little bit more about my story, about why I'm doing what I'm doing with Top End Devs, why I changed it from devchat.tv to Top End Devs. But what I really want to get into is that I have decided that I'm going to build the platform that I always wished I had with devchat.tv, and I renamed it to Top End Devs because I want to give you the resources that are going to help you to build the career that you want, right? So whether you want to be an influencer in tech, whether you want to go and just max out your salary and then go live a lifestyle with your family, your friends, or just traveling the world or whatever, I want to give you the resources that are going to help you do that. We're going to have career and leadership resources in there, and we're going to be giving you content on a regular basis to help you level up and max out your career. So go check it out at topendevs.com. If you sign up before my birthday, that's December 14th. If you sign up before my birthday, you can get 50% off the lifetime of your subscription. Once again, that's topendevs.com. Well, we brought you on because we ran across an article where you were talking about using Isolator with Sidekick to do awesome stuff. Do you want to give us kind of the rundown on that, just what Isolator is and then how it solves the particular problem that you're looking at? And then we can dive in and talk about being awesome with Sidekick.
It's at a high level, the article that I put together covered two things. So one of them kind of focusing on Isolator. So the project I was kind of looking at the time was doing a migration from Delayed Job to Sidekick. And so I had recently heard about Isolator from listening to the Blackjet podcast, and that sort of came up there. Kind of pretty similar, similar context of, you know, wanting to know if this particular issue was happening where, you know, you could queue up some work unwittingly in a transaction and Sidekick would pick that up faster than you would think that it would happen. And so for me, the context was, I'd sort of been using Sidekick for a while, and I kind of wanted to, like, I already had some knowledge about that issue, and I know the context for me was more around wanting to know during that migration if we were going to hit any snags right out of the gate. And so, in terms of adding it in, like, we had a whole bunch of hits pretty early on of just, like, there's that work being done in transactions that we sort of needed to clean up from there. And, you know, thankfully, it was pretty easy to sort of get that smoothed out. And the gen helps a lot with that. And it kind of helps with some other kind of more educational issues sort of going forward for newer devs and stuff like that that come under the project.
Gotcha. So as I was reading through this, it looks like Isolator in particular just kind of keeps you from doing, I don't know, dumb stuff in the middle of a transaction.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, the gem edits at the hollow is like just picking up non-atomic database or work inside database transactions. So in our case, we had a couple of instances come up, which were, you know, both things of like doing up circuit workers, but then a couple of HTTP requests as well inside those transactions. So the article itself goes over the circuit side of things, but there are a couple of other examples of work that you don't want to be doing because you might leave the transaction open too long. But yeah, the article itself kind of goes more into the psyche side of things and how that interaction between the database transactions and how psyche can sort of pick up things that you're not expecting sooner, or like you might queue things up and the transaction doesn't commit properly for whatever reason, might fail in some of the work that you're doing after you queue up work. And so in that case, you know, you have psyche picking up a worker that you actually don't want to run anymore because it's not going to use the data that you're expecting to do. And that might have some different implications depending on what you're after.
Right. So the example you gave was like adding a comment. And initially, my thought process was that, yeah, you know, you don't want to add your delay job in the middle of a transaction where you're saving your comment to the database, right? Because if the transaction gets backed out, then so does your delay job. But that may actually be more of a feature than a bug, depending. But it's kind of out of band enough to where I had to think about it and really figure out if that was really something that I cared about. But then, yeah, when you're talking about, yeah, not knowing what state the data is in and maybe working on a record that isn't how you thought it was, that's where it really kind of made sense to me, right? Because you enqueue the job to run later, but if the transaction fails, then what you expected to happen didn't actually happen.
Yeah, exactly. So the create case of like a thing, like the work that starts before like your object is actually the database, that case there is relatively benign. I mean, like for the most part, it'll probably, your work will run, the thing's not there, it'll fail, and then Scikit will just pick it back up and then retry it, and then more than likely that transaction will be done by then. The case that you brought up is probably the stickier one that people will run into, where like a thing is just not what you thought it to be at that point for whatever reason. And it might be the failed transactions, but it might be updates as well, right? Like, so if you do the queuing up of the work in an update transaction, it's a kind of the same scenario there, where it's like that work will go off the stale data potentially. And so whatever work you happen to be doing, like this, the comment mailer is a relatively simple example, but you know, you might be doing some work on a thing that you expect to be in the new state, but it's not in the new state, it's in the old state still.
I mean, I think we have new ways to do this too now, right? Because with Rails 7, we have our parallel queries going on and other things. And I think at the end of the day, right, this is an instance where you are specifically saying, hey, in this section of the code, I want to do everything in sequence. But if you make calls that parallelize stuff, you know, you have to make sure that those asynchronous things are done before other things go on. Or in the case of Sidekick, which can just start right away, you actually want to enqueue that to go after the transaction's done. So, you know, you have to think about things like this, right? And like all parallelism related matters, it's actually harder than it looks on the surface.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I have no play with the parallel theories or anything like that, but yeah, like the second part of the article, which is not super in depth or anything, I've kind of left that sort of looking for a follow up, but it kind of explores things like Isolator in that use case of like trying to prevent some like common gotchas, like what tools do we have available to sort of like smooth that developer experience, so that you don't need to there's a lot of arcane knowledge like that, but like, you know, stuff like Sidekick is going to pick things up straight away that you might not expect to. And so it's kind of a look at like what can we use to sort of take away the need for someone to have to disperse knowledge like that, that can get picked up with tools like this. And so I kind of briefly mentioned there with like for my case going forward, it's a better conversation starter with other developers who potentially not run into that case, because you know, you have a specific error message about Isolator. It's something that's Googleable. They can look it up beforehand, and you know, they might raise an issue being like, hey, I'm getting this error, I don't actually really know what it is, and get some help with that. And I find having that that area there is, like I said, it's a better conversation starter for me personally, at least, having that context rather than, you know, like some weird issue in prod potentially around like, hey, my work is not doing what I expect it to. And having to try and sort of like, you probably lean into this issue pretty early on and try and like narrow that down. But, you know, it's the investigation you need to do.
Yeah. One thing that I saw, though, that I'm just going to say it, Rails callbacks is not my favorite feature in Rails. And I noticed that, yeah, you basically moved a lot of the enqueuing of the jobs to, you know, an after commit or an after create or things like that. And I mean, it basically did just enqueue the job. So I wasn't too bothered by it. But most of the time when I'm running through those kinds of things where it's like a comment, right? And then it's notify the author. And so you hit the mailer and you tell it to deliver later. A lot of times that's actually, you're doing a lot of that work in the controller anyway. And so when you check for success, you could just enqueue it there. And I tend to prefer that, but I mean, what you're talking about here makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I think the ideal is that, yeah, you're doing work like that in places that make more sense and that you're not relying on callbacks as well. But I mean, in my case in particular, like it was a project where like, the callbacks are already kind of permeated through a lot of the code base. And so this is kind of just a layer for us to sort of like, at least, you know, have a bit of a launching pad to sort of be like, okay, this is all the work that is happening in callbacks. Give us a level of safety there. If we want to sort of move away in the future, we can and start to sort of like restructure the things. But like I said, there was already kind of like a breadth of work where that work is happening in those callbacks. There's a lot of, like, there is all the stuff at the end as well about the ad hoc transactions, which, you know, if you're spinning up manual transactions in whether it's like a service object or whatever pattern of choice, there's that syntax as well of like using after commit everywhere to have a small block to do that work after commit, which is I've not played with that syntax too much yet, but you know, on paper, I find it readable of being able to be like, you know, here's an ad hoc transaction of spun up, here's a whole bunch of work, and I still want to do this outside of that.
Yeah, you know, I'm really surprised that the transactions themselves don't already have this feature where you can just give it a success block and perform something after. It's such a common pattern. But so I'm more curious how you came to this. Like, did you discover this in like a production bug? Was this just something that you found from watching that or listening to the bike shed? You know, was there a debugging process to finding these things?
Yeah. Oh, so you mean the issue in general?
Yeah.
Yeah. So probably a mix of like, the process itself. Like I said, I've kind of used Sidekick a fair bit over the last sort of 8-ish years. Of doing background jobs. So it's a thing that's sort of come up before, and it's a gotcha that I've sort of had to work through myself on like different other projects. And so the context of what I've written up here is more around like coming to the table with that prior knowledge. But for me, it's kind of just like, how can I, you know, avoid other people having to sort of go through the same thing?
So my follow-up question is, have you found a good way to test this specific scenario, or is it just you kind of using isolator to raise those cases where it would happen?
Yes, so using the gen to raise those cases of like an existing project already kind of doing its own test, whether it's integration tests to sort of go end to end, or like in the case of like service objects, of doing some specs of that flow of whatever work that is. Isolator will sort of raise those errors in tests and like, and you know, give you some stuff to work off around where that work might be happening. And it's a you know, Isolator is not the only tool. Like we had a look at some of the stuff that like GitLab does, for example. They do kind of like a baked in solution for the same thing that, you know, tracks the transactions and raises a similar error. But Isolator, I think, does like I mentioned, it does like HTTP requests as well. I think that the thing was sort of with GitLab was pretty Sidekick oriented.
So do you use Isolator kind of in the context of workers themselves too, so you can prevent further cases of this happening? Like if a worker triggers a worker that also would call one of these callbacks or something like that?
If
workers call workers, kind of example. I'm thinking this scenario, you have a worker that goes through and creates other workers to like do a batch of things as an example?
Not yet. So we're doing some batching work, but yeah, at the moment the use case for isolator has been more in the particularly the service object kind of context of where this work is sort of happening more in the like Rails request kind of context, like doing stuff in line.
Wouldn't you catch the top level worker in that case, Valentino? So like isn't your question like would isolator catch the scenario or?
Yeah, like would isolator catch the subsequent workers? Right, like say you have a worker that's going and it's going to say, okay, I want to send like 500 deliver later emails. Is it going to go and catch, right? And it'll queue up all those deliver later emails that are, right? Maybe so, those are in their own transaction that's updating a user or something.
So I think, right, based off of what we've been described, it would catch the top level one. Or if your worker was enqueuing a bunch of emails in a transaction, which is probably not a good idea to do in a worker, then theoretically you would catch all of those. I have done the pattern before, but you do have to be conscious about what you're doing when you do that.
Yeah, it sounds like what it's doing is it's just double checking and saying, you opened a transaction on the database, which means that everything inside of here is supposed to be atomic. So if you're passing out to anything that isn't basically logic or the database, then you're probably counting on this transaction completing and then doing the other work. And so you should be queuing that stuff up after the transaction ends. In other words, if you're updating a comment and you want to send an email, if you're updating a comment and you want to hit an HTTP endpoint for an API or something like that, you're generally assuming that the transaction is going to finish without failing. And so you should do that work outside the transaction so that that stuff doesn't have to be atomic with the database work.
I think so. I actually like this. I think this is super awesome. As somebody who does, Chuck was saying earlier, I don't like to do stuff in after commits. I do it in my controller, right? And I do a lot of stuff in service objects, right? Like, so I wrap these processes, so to speak, right, up in something that encapsulates the process. That's my preferred pattern. But when you are like a single person and your app is very new, I think there's nothing wrong with using callbacks. And then you can graduate to something later on as it becomes more appropriate. Now, if you have like 1,000 callbacks on a model, maybe you should consider a new pattern right then. But in the beginning, most people are doing pretty innocent stuff. After commit, I need to enqueue this email. And that's really common. And I think this is phenomenal for helping people to sort of like catch some of those edge cases that become race conditions later.
Yeah, for me, it's a little bit of like the you don't know what you don't know almost when it comes to like a newer project that you're coming onto as well. So that was the case for me in this adding this, and that helped there of like, okay, cool. I don't really have the full lay of the land with all the work that's happening in a delayed context, and this kind of helps sort of like give me a bit of confidence in what I'm trying to sort of achieve here.
Honestly, though, I think that's actually a common story, right? Like, our community is full of people who they know some stuff over here and they don't know stuff over there, and Rails is one of the reasons why Rails is awesome is because it enables people to come in when they don't have all that expertise and still be productive. So it's really easy to get an app up and going and running in production and have this kind of stuff. So yeah, I definitely think that's a use case that I expect other people to have sometimes, for sure.
Hi, this is Charles Maxwood from Top End Devs. And lately I've been coaching some people on starting some podcasts and in some cases, just taking their career to the next level. You know, whether you're beginner going to intermediate going to advanced, whether you're trying to get noticed in the community or go freelance, I've been helping these folks figure out how to get in front of people, how to build relationships, and how to build their careers and max out and just go to the next level. So if you're interested in talking to me and having me help you go to the next level, go to topendevs.com/coaching. I will give you a 1-hour free session where we can figure out what you're trying to do, where you're trying to go, and figure out what the next steps are. And then from there, we can figure out how to get you to the place you want to go. So once again, that's topendevs.com/coaching.
So do you have any other things that have saved you this kind of work, or have you applied this in other areas?
So, I mean, this is kind of in a similar vein to things that we use like strong migrations for, or like another batch of really specific knowledge in a lot of cases to try and sort of take a lot of the risk out of deploying, you know, certain migrations that might cause issues. That kind of helps us a fair bit and trying to sort of like educate people on an ongoing basis.
Can you elaborate on what strong migrations are?
Yeah, for sure. So strong migrations is a gem. And so it will do a kind of similar thing here. Like it'll raise errors if you try to do a certain database migration. If you want to try and add an index to an existing table, for example, and it will raise an error if you don't do it concurrently. And so it'll give you some like guidance on what that actually is supposed to look like. And so it might give you an example of like, you know, what adding an index looks like, or it might give you an example if you try to delete a column from a table. It'll raise an error in that case and sort of give you an example of how you're supposed to do that over a couple of different migrations. So things like that. And those are definitely issues that we've sort of had prior of like, you know, in our PR template, we've had a checklist sort of floating around being like, are you doing these things? Check those out and make sure you're doing that properly. Gems like, you know, Isolator and strong migrations kind of help sort of whittle that away of like how much the reviewer and even the author of a PR has to sort of like be on top of if we can sort of automate some of this out. And we're trying to, I guess, expand our use of RuboCop internally as well to try and not so much kind of in this vein of picking up some gotchas, although there is a little bit of that, but also trying to sort of nudge people towards some like.
Introducing Wondersuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the Wondersuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Prefer patterns for certain things. And it helps, you know, with, you know, we're trying to do a bit of cleanup with things like paper trail at the moment and sort of rework how we're doing that. But doing some custom cops helps us to sort of prevent, you know, people, for context, we've changed the class we use for paper trail, and we track new versions. We put together a custom cop to just sort of prevent people from setting up paper trail on a new model without sort of our preferred sort of config so that we don't have to clean that up again later. So stuff like that, it kind of all pulls together of trying to help educate people, not just with best practices, but how we're doing things on the app on a day-to-day as well. And that kind of helps sort of achieve some level of consistency, which is always nice.
That makes sense, especially from, you know, from the standpoint of, how do I put it? Like, some of these things I feel like should be strongly encouraged, I guess, without actually forcing them. But others, yeah, you definitely want to be enforcing them because it's just, hey, look, there's another way to do this and it's less problematic. But, you know, for example, you talked about adding indexes concurrently, right? If I've had the database there for a while and I realize I need the index, then I may need it in its own migration just because that's the only way I'm going to get it in production, right? Otherwise, it's going to conflict. It's going to say, no, that column's already there. But at the same time, yeah, if it can catch it when I'm trying to push it up and it says, hey, you've got two migrations here, you know, you can combine them, right? Because it's the same concern, not Rails concern, but the same area of concern, then yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, the strong migrations gem in particular has helped, yeah, prevent some of those gotchas and the more riskier gotchas as well. Like, so with, particularly with indexes, you know, there are deploy issues that potentially happen there when you're dealing with bigger tables.
Strong migrations is a really, not because strong migration solves the problem, but I think strong migrations helps to build really good habits. And as we sort of like move to a world where we're moving our deploys from being like atomic things that where we run Capistrano deploy, right? To being things where you can have, you know, continuous deployment, or you have Docker containers involved, other things where, you know, you don't always know as the state that your app is in during the deploy process. And there's sort of like a, you know, well, this one might be at this state and this other one might be this other state. So as there's a lot of gotchas, specifically around deploys, that your migrations can really cause huge problems with, especially when you mix in like, oh, I am updating the data inside this table to something during, you know, during my deploy, or adding columns, you know, that maybe one of my servers has the new code on for the new column and the other does not. So I feel like strong migrations helps you to get some of those like good patterns that you, that your team will need if you're doing some more complicated stuff like that. So yeah, I'm actually kind of a big fan around some of these things. At the same time, I would also say like all things that are like curbs or, I don't know, guiding barriers or whatever we want to call them, it just depends. Cause that's a little cost. Like it's a little bit of administrative cost that you're adding to your app to make sure that every PR gets through. And theoretically, it can buy you, especially on larger projects, it can buy you a lot of consistency and smooth over those problems with deploys and things like that. But at the small scale, that might be something you have to make a judgment call on whether you want that or not.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's all just about the balancing of the kind of risk reward side of things. For us, it definitely falls on that side of the extra work is worth it. Like we are at the kind of the scale that we kind of need to prevent some of those things. And like these tools aren't going to catch everything, but it is just around like you said, but like trying to nudge people towards some like better best practices, like more sort of rounded out knowledge, that kind of thing. Like we've still run into certain issues, even with strong migrations in place, just because of, you know, you might write the perfect migration, but it might touch a table that's going to cause some issues. And so we've kind of had to augment that a little bit with some more baked into the app knowledge around, you know, doing certain migrations with certain tables. But yeah, it's all, like you said, it's all a bit of a game, risk reward versus like the cost.
So you mentioned you make some custom comps for RubaCop to kind of help with preventative maintenance, right?
Yeah, so that's a new thing that we're trying to make a little bit more of.
So, I mean, that's great. We do that a lot too at Doximity, and it really does help with some things. At what point do you kind of come together and be like, all right, we need to spend some time and money, you know, making these? And kind of what rewards are you looking for out of it?
Yeah, that's a good question. So more broadly, that's not a conversation we've had to sort of have yet. In the case specifically of like where I sort of had ventured out to do a cop, that was the case of like, here's a whole bunch of maintenance that we're trying to do with our paper trail versions table, which is quite large, and we kind of want to prevent certain things happening going forward so we can sort of whittle down the table size for this. And yeah, kind of out of the gate for me, at least, was the cost of writing a cop that just checked the config specified, the, you know, the certain parameters that we kind of needed going forward so that people weren't adding on extra files that we didn't really want to be there and have to clean up again. That was kind of the cost was low enough to save us that additional work down the line of having to sort of like revisit these extra models, kind of bring it back up to the config that we needed to be, clean them up again, sort of bring us around. And, you know, in the future, we'll eventually get to a point where we probably drop that custom cup, because once we finish our cleanup, we'll just go back to using the default version model. But, you know, there's this kind of weird limbo period in between where we don't want people sort of using the defaults. We want to sort of not be using some of those config options until we're done. And so this helps with that. Like this is kind of a certain layer of administrative prevention on our part to just sort of keep things in line and not have to worry about it. I think we have a couple of custom cops floating around that were written a while back. Kind of like I mentioned just before, just around like kind of augmenting what strong migrations is doing. So just checking kind of in this little vein of lots of preventative stuff, but also, yeah, just checking like migrations on some of our like large tables and more higher churn tables to see if there are migration that needs to kind of happen outside of ours. And so the cops are kind of like it's a little bit heavy-handed, but we kind of check that, and it's just a moment of pause to be like, oh, cool, no, I'm actually fine with doing this. I can, like, it'll play with whoever it is to be like, okay, cool, I need to play this with, like, ops or whatever, and we can take this up and happen down the line. And so, yeah, that's a little bit of extra overhead, but it certainly saves a larger issue that would happen in prod. And so, yeah, I think the hard part with a lot of this stuff is trying to, you want to take as much of the risk out as possible. You're not going to take all the risk out, but hopefully you can take enough out so that, you know, people can fail in a less risky environment and not, you know, like you mentioned, deploying to prod and not knowing the state of certain things when you do it.
So I wanted to piggyback off of what you said before anything, because I have a client that I'm working with right now who only has a production environment, no staging environment, and they're on Elastic Beanstalk, and there's a lot of, it's the, you know, very old Elastic Beanstalk, so they actually are unable to create a staging environment because of lots of problems. And so we are creating an ultra conservative like strategy to slowly like add some things so that we can migrate their stuff to a completely different deployment system. And, you know, a lot of your messages about like reducing risk, it just like kind of reminds me about this particular client is extremely risk averse, but I have worked at lots of places and I've had clients before who are completely non-risk averse. And, you know, it just depends on the constraints of the place that you're at, you know, as to what amount of risk you can eat or whatever. And this is just an extraordinary exception, I think. But yes, I definitely wanted to ask you. So the whole thing that started this entire thing was because you decided, you know what, we're done with delayed jobs, let's move to Sidekick. I'm not asking you to tell me which one's better, but I'm just curious what motivated your move. I mean, look, they do things slightly differently, and I'm just kind of curious what was the constraint in your environment that made you want to make that choice? Because ripping out your old job backend and replacing it with a new one is a risky thing. So something must have motivated it, and I'm just kind of curious what it was in y'all's case.
Yeah, good question. I don't have all of the context of it. So this wasn't at my current job, so my understanding of the context was just around trying to ease some of the load off the database that was in place. So the scale of everything was a lot smaller than what we kind of had access to at Hotdog. There was a pretty kind of nice unused Redis instance that was sitting there, and we were just kind of like, look, the amount of jobs and everything that we have in place, moving at this point is not out of the realms of feasibility. And it'll help certain things like scale up, and the retry logic and all of Sidekick is quite nice. So there are certain things that we kind of had in place that we liked about it. And like I said, the database interactions, taking them away and moving them over to Sidekick, so was one of the drivers for that.
Nice. Were you already on active jobs at the time, or were you using like delayed jobs and Sidekick like raw, so to speak?
So in this project, it was on top of active job. There were a couple instances that I vaguely remember having to use like the raw Sidekick workers as well in a certain case. At Hotdog, for instance, a lot of that stuff is raw Sidekick workers though. We've only got a couple of instances of using active job. And I think, like, we're using some of the batching and stuff in Sidekick as well. I don't remember if that actually plays nicely or super nicely.
The pro version or a roll your own? Or no. There's, like, a gem version. There's a pro version and then, like, a roll your own that you can do at home.
Yeah, so we're using the pro version.
Cool.
All right. Anything else that we want to dive into here before we go to picks? All right. Let's go ahead and do picks. Hey, folks. If you love this podcast and would like to support the show, or if you wish you could listen without the sponsorship messages, then you're in luck. We're setting up new premium podcast feeds where you can get all of the episodes released after Christmas 2020 without the ads. Signing up will help us pay for editing and production, and you can go sign up at devchat.tv/premium.
Valentino, do you want to start us off with picks?
Give me a minute.
How about you, John? Do you want to start us off with picks?
Yes. So, I mean, my picks are going to be pretty similar to my picks from last episode because this Rails upgrade is definitely what's on my mind right now that I just did. So a little more context. I just finished upgrading an app from Rails 5 onto Rails 7, and they were using 100% asset pipeline. And I've been writing stimulus controllers on this app slowly, and kind of like, if you've ever added stimulus to asset pipeline, you would, I believe, sympathize with my pain that it sucks a lot because asset pipeline just doesn't really handle modular JavaScript very well. And when you go to stimulus, you're like, well, I just want to use the ES6 syntax and all this kind of stuff. And it's hard. And stimulus 3 doesn't really work with it. So you can't use the new cool stuff. So anyway, I wanted all that. And I was looking at import maps. This app also has JavaScript that is not modular. And I didn't want to spend tons of time modularizing this JavaScript at this time. So I wanted to have my cake and eat it too. And I looked at import maps, and it really looked to me like I was going to be able to have my cake and eat it too with import maps working with asset pipeline. And I'm very happy to say that that is exactly what happened. Import maps worked great. So that's my first pick. And then while I was doing this, the app is also a Devise app, and I had to add Turbo to that. Well, I didn't have to add Turbo, but I did because all the import maps tutorials have Turbo in them, and I was having other things going on. So I ended up on Turbo. That's what happened. But there's a weird interaction with Devise that just breaks your app. You just get these CSRF token errors. And I found like a tutorial on that. It was a Go Rails video. So it was non-obvious what the problem was. And I even saw this like early on in my troubleshooting, but I had like two problems at the time. So it didn't really hit me that this was the problem. And that ended up being one of the two things that I had going on. Yeah, so that really helped out. And just at the end of the day, man, I'm just like going to pump stimulus again. I took some stuff that was in the application JS. I created a like document controller that basically I just put on my app HTML outer thing or whatever. And then I put the stuff that we had to run on load on that. And boom, I was suddenly removing code that was in our application JS file out of that into a stimulus controller. It was great. So all of that was like really awesome. The conversion process went mostly smoothly, other than the 2 days I spent spinning on these weird Devise Turbo issues. And yeah, all in all, very happy with some of the new tooling that's coming out for Rails. So I'm gonna put those picks in.
Awesome. Valentino, what are your picks?
So I did recently read an article from Julia Evans on some tiny programs that she's written just for personal use. I got a kick out of them. One was getting a vaccine appointment or looking at housing market data. And it kind of made me a little nostalgic with some scripts that I've made in the past. So it's definitely a great read. Check it out. And Julia Evans just has some incredible content. And I recently bought up just a bunch of coupons to her online store for her comics that she writes that are very super informative. So I'm giving away a bunch of them. If you want to follow me on Twitter, tweet at me, the code name V, T-H-E, code name V. You know, just tell me you're interested and I'll send you one. I just really love her content and trying to support her where I can.
Awesome. I'm going to jump in here with a few picks. So for board games, I usually just go week to week picking games, but since we recorded two episodes this week, I have to pick and choose. So I'm going to pick one. I think I picked this one a while back, but I picked it before I was handing out Board Game Geek ranks. And so I'm going to pick it again just because it's super fun. It's called The Lost Ruins of Arnak. It came out in 2020. Board Game Geek rank on it is a 2.87, right? So I mentioned last time that most of the more complicated games that most people, casual gamers, play are twos. So this one's a bit more complicated than that. It's definitely fun. I think it's well worth it. Its overall rank on Board Game Geek is 31, which means that people who are board game geeks like it. So yeah, I'm going to pick Lost Ruins of Arnak. Just to give a little bit of explanation as to what it is. You're explorers and you're trying to find relics. And then as you find relics, it gives you more stuff. As you explore more areas, you have to fight monsters. But as you fight monsters again, you get more relics and tokens and stuff like that. You can research stuff and move that token up the board as well. And yeah, anyway, whoever has the most artifacts at the end wins. And so anyway, it's pretty fun. It's 1 to 4 players. I have not played it one player. Most of these games are a little bit different when you play in one player than when you play with multiple people. But way fun game. So I'm going to pick that. I'm going to remind people about Rails Remote Conf. Go to railsremoteconf.com. The CFP will be open. I tend to invite people who have been on the show and fit into some of the tracks that we're going to put together. But yeah, you can also just go get your ticket right now. So anyway, those are my picks. Anton, what are your picks?
Cool. I might go a little bit, one in both worlds. You mentioned the board game. I might want as well. One of my sort of recent ones has been Spirit Island. I don't know if you've played that. It's a super cool board game.
What is it? Spirit what?
Spirit Island.
Spirit Island.
Yeah. So it's a more co-op-y board game. You and whoever you're playing with, so I think it's 1 to 4 people as well. You pick an island spirit and you have certain powers and you're trying to drive away people who are trying to colonize the island, essentially. You use these powers and your like kind of presence tokens to sort of expand your influence and sort of remove the opposition, basically. And the colonizers are all driven by the turns as you go. So like you haven't played it one player, but you can kind of pick and augment the game and make it more or less difficult as you want. But me and my partner played it. So it's a pretty cool pre-play game. And then the other
thing. I'm just going to chime in here. So Board Game Geek has that one at a 4.04 weight. So it's a rather involved game.
It's not too bad in terms of complexity.
Oh, really?
But it does take a little bit to get going.
Okay.
Once you get that rhythm for it, then it starts to sort of like pick up the pace. But there is, admittedly, there is a fair bit to sort of like take on at the start.
Cool.
And the other thing I'll pick on the topic of Billy Evans, I recently used Ruby Spy a fair bit for a particular problem we tried to debug with some production workers. So Ruby Spy is a Ruby profiler. The context of what we were trying to do was to try and like, basically open up a bike communities run Ruby Spy against a particular worker. And then, so we have like four, I think it two, anywhere from like 1 to 14 worker processes. This was pretty handy in sort of diving into any one of those to sort of figure out what was going on in certain workloads that were kind of causing some weird issues that we weren't expecting. And you get a cool like flame graph output that you can kind of drill into and sort of see what might be happening and whether pop time has been sort of been soaked up. So yeah, we're trying to expand our tooling around that a little bit to make it easier for people to sort of do that on a more ad hoc basis. But it was a real success for the issue that we tried to dive into.
Awesome. Well, if people want to follow up with you, where do they go?
Yeah, so I'm not super active on Twitter, but you can follow me there. It's just A. Ivanopoulos. That's just my name. And then antonivanopoulos.com is where I've been trying to do some more posting. So I'll probably try and get back into that a little bit more this year.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming. This was a lot of fun. All right, folks. Till next time, Max out.
Take care.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.